Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, January 15th edition of Byers & Company. In the studios this hour, Chief Jim Getz from the Decatur Police Department will also announce our winners of the Illini tickets yesterday, courtesy of First Group. Very popular. People really want those tickets. We're in the top 25. Company starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back here on a Wednesday, see Keekly retired?
I can't believe it. I watched that guy play in person the last, his entire career, at least once a year. They play in Atlanta. He's 28 years old.
You know, I think this is smart, though, and I think you're going to see a growing number of these kids that are good with their finances. You know what I mean? They go into the league. They make a lot of money. They don't squander it. They put it, you know, and they can probably walk away thinking about their mental health and their physical health long term. You know, 28 years old, he's had access to making a lot of money. All too often in professional sports, those athletes blow through that money. I think about Gronk, right?
Yep.
I don't know if it's true, but they always said that he only spent his endorsement money and that every penny he was ever paid as an NFL player all went into savings and into investments.
Same with Marshawn Lynch, taking care of his chicken, as he likes to call it.
Yeah.
You got to take care of your chicken.
I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Your money.
I get it. I don't speak kid today. I don't know.
He speaks his own thing.
There you go. But Luke Kuechly was a man. He was fun to watch, right?
Oh, yeah. Very, very. He's like, I was thinking about that this morning. If you're a Cubs fan during the Albert Pujols days and just randomly Albert retired, you're like, man, he really wrecked us a lot. But, you know, hey, it's kind of sad to see him go.
Yeah. He was like an avid outdoors guy, right? If I'm not mistaken, maybe one of those Hard Knocks or one. Maybe it was the Amazon series.
Yeah, I think it was.
Followed the Carolina Panthers, and he was an intriguing guy.
A lot of head injuries, too.
Yeah, well, that's
a cerebral guy. He needed to do this,
well,
probably.
28 years old and retired. And I don't know what I'd do with the rest of my life. That's the crazy thing. People don't think about that. When people have a hard time letting it go, it's the structure. I mean, this kid's life from probably high school through college into the NFL, you know, that what that whole week looks like and what they do and the structure and the schedule. And here's what Tuesday looks like and Wednesday looks like. And now all of a sudden you wake up and it's Monday and you don't have a schedule or a structure. That's got to be hard.
Yeah, I bet it'd probably be real easy to just get real fat.
Well, a few of them do that, too. I don't know.
You gotta have something to do, right?
Yeah, that's well, right. I was going to bring this up just wondering. You know, this is a conversation you'll be having with yourself before long.
I've got plenty to do. I can find something.
All right. Police Chief Jim Getz joins us. How long have you been with the Decatur Police Department?
21 years.
21 years. Yeah. What'd you start? I mean, give me an idea of where you started. What was your first...
Started out by going to the Illinois State Police Training Academy. As you know, we send all of our recruits down to the training facility here in Macon County, now south end of Decatur. But back then, we sent them over to Illinois State. We sent our guys to Illinois State Police for the training.
All right. What made you have the idea about going into law enforcement?
You know what? It's something that I always wanted to do since a little kid. And I think part of that was retired police officer, you know, with us was a neighbor. His parents were a neighbor to my grandparents. And I would be over there, you know, maybe on the weekends or maybe in the evening or something. And he'd pull up in his squad car, go in and visit his parents. And I kind of just caught on to it then. And that was Bob Witten. So we'll give a shout out
to Bob Witten
this morning. Yeah. And so that's how really I became interested and went into the military right after high school and just kind of continued to follow that path when I got out.
Which branch did you serve?
The Army.
The Army. Well, thank you for your service. It's amazing to me, that wasn't that long ago in the greater scheme of things, but the world has changed dramatically, and I can't think of any area where it's changed more from a perception point of view, from a reality that you live in point of view, than police work and law enforcement. I was taught as a kid that guy, and back then it was mostly that guy. Now, thankfully, you know, we're breaking those, you know, boundaries down. But that was the person you looked for if you needed help. That was the person that was there to have your back. And I'm not going to say that there hasn't been something you can complain about with a law enforcement officer over the years, but I think it's such an unfair total wash of just the profession that has come under fire the last 5 or 6 years that I don't think is deserved.
No, I agree with you, and like I said, I've been doing it over 20 years, 21 years, and it's really, really changed for the most for me over the last 5 years, especially the negative towards police officers, and unfairly. I mean, these guys and gals go out there and do things that nobody else wants to do or can do, and they do it with professionalism. I mean, we make millions overall as a country. We make millions and millions of contacts with people on a daily basis, and we very rarely have anything that turns bad. It's a very small percentage. So sometimes that one thing makes the national news, and it puts a stamp on all of us. Yeah. And we know that's a low percentage.
It is a low percentage, but there's also, you know, what bothers me is I don't, if there's bad behavior by a law enforcement person. I mean, I'm not saying you cover that up or you don't do anything about it. But what is just totally ignored with many in the media and the other side of this argument is that much of this is instigated by the person that's involved in this. I mean, it's not the officer starting this altercation. It's bad behavior by people.
Yeah.
And it's like they're just, well, that doesn't even factor into the argument for some
exactly.
folks.
Exactly. You know, when you look at these officer-involved shootings, most of the time, and I don't have the numbers on it, and I don't know that there's any numbers out there at all, but it's about compliance. If a police officer asks you to tell you to do something, do it. And in most of these cases where you look back at these officer-involved shootings, it was the person that was being under arrest or investigated that just wouldn't listen to the police officer. And that escalated things. And so, yeah, our officers are trained in de-escalation, but it also has to have some responsibility on the citizens that we're dealing with.
Absolutely.
To do the same thing.
And that officer owes their family and their community the right to go home at night safe and take all the precautions that are necessary. And at the same time, what I'm encouraged by, you know, it was interesting. You mentioned the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center. We did an interview about 4 or 5 months ago where Howard had brought in some experts from across the country, and I know members of your department, Sheriff's Department, and they're doing some sort of national thought process on this suicide by cop syndrome thing that we have about just what you said, about de-escalating things, about right. dealing with people with mental illness that maybe screaming and yelling and being the authoritative figure in this isn't the best way to go about it. I see this constant evolution by law enforcement itself looking at how they do things and how to do it in a better way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much training out there and so many studies that when we see a problem that's manifested itself and getting bigger and bigger, we usually get out ahead of it. And as you said, we train to it. And the mental illness is the big thing. And I would say going back probably at least 10 years, the crisis intervention teams have came into play in the training like on those issues to deal just with the mentally ill. And a lot of it is just de-escalation yeah. and talking to that person.
But I would also ask the other side of this argument to understand it's real easy, you know, writing on Facebook. It's a different story in an alley at 2:30 in the morning, you know, in the pitch dark. I mean, you know. I know it was, I think Howard told me it was Forbes that asked him why he was stockpiling ammunition, you know, and his surprise at the question was a complete lack of understanding by people who don't do what you do, is that the best way to train is to train with live ammunition. I mean, to have as close to a realistic mm-hmm. situation is how you're going to train officers to respond when they are in that real life situation. And one of the things that he has spent money on in training under the public safety guise of the foundation is just that. But yet people take that and they turn that into something it's not.
Absolutely. I think you're right. The best training is to get as close to realistic as possible. Sitting home in an armchair quarterbacking the next day as a civilian that has no training or experience. A perfect example is at the simulators that is down at the Macon County
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Training center. Yeah, it is awesome. I've used it. Several of our officers have used it. The new recruits, I'm sure they are using them down there. But we've taken civilians down there and put them through scenarios, and they end up shooting the bad guy when they had a phone in their hand, or the bad guy was putting his hands up, or shoot an innocent kid, and all of a sudden they're like, boy, these decisions are tough. And then, you know, and I say, yes, they are. Now I add, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning when the adrenaline's really pumping because you're in the heat of things. And so our officers, you know, not just here in Decatur, but all over across the country, they make good decisions, you know, very, very high majority of the time. And so my hats are off to them. I think the job is tougher and tougher every year, and it's tough as it's been.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't – and I would suggest, you know, to police unions, not specifically here in Decatur, but just across the board, you know, when a woman walks into the wrong apartment and shoots somebody, you know, the blue line's got to stop. there.
Yeah, I agree. There's some fights worth fighting, and there's some fights where they're absolutely wrong, and who cares if, you know, the union says you're supposed to fight for them. If they're wrong, they're wrong, and I think at some point the unions need to draw that line, too, and say, hey.
Like any other profession.
Absolutely. You know, cut ties with those people because they're not representing the law enforcement profession.
No, but they're going to overrepresent the image of law enforcement to everyone as a whole.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard. Howard, we had an interview this morning talking about life in gray, and, you know, black and white is how everybody wants to look at everything, and it's just not that way. You've got human emotions. You've got people involved. Human beings are going to make mistakes. I don't care what profession they're in. But I can't think of a better prepared, more trained, highly professional police force than one we have here in Decatur. I've watched it a million times up close. And I'm telling you, 90% of you out there, with people spitting in your face and seeing the worst in society and trying to instigate and trying to film, I would defy you to be as professional as our police officers. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I get so many people come up to me and say, I don't know how you guys put up with all that out there. And I've, you know, like I said, I've been doing this for 21 years. And the biggest thing to me that I see is just the disrespect, not for law enforcement, just authority in general. I mean, my daughter teaches at one of the schools, and my wife teaches, and it's just a different. I don't know whether it's the upbringing at home, mm-hmm. What they're seeing on television or through the internet, but the respect for authority to me is as low as it's ever been.
And I'm not. I still think you're also seeing a percentage number of people, because I think the vast majority. I explained this to Nick yesterday. If you want a microcosm of life. Yesterday, you know, we had a big announcement at the Children's Museum, and you had hundreds of people there that were super stoked and excited. You got a fringe element over here that's mad about everything, and most people just wanted to win Illini tickets. I think it's the same thing you're talking about here. I think there's a vast majority. We saw these percentage numbers, this polling across America about by profession, and military still ranks way high. Now, you wouldn't believe that if you just followed the media or Twitter. You know, but I think there's a gigantic chunk of people that still have a healthy respect for what people on the front lines do. They're just not noisy.
Yeah, and that's always the case. Your best people or your most biggest supporters do it in a quiet manner. They're not out there
yelling and
screaming.
They don't want to argue with people on Facebook.
They don't, because it doesn't get you anywhere. Because you can't reason with irrational people, and I think that's why they stay out of it.
And even if they put their toes in it, I still believe there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole. And when somebody needs a cop, that whole idea changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? We don't hold that against people. I mean, we can sit there and listen to somebody be disrespectful to the police all day long, but if they call tomorrow, we're still going to respond and help them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we're talking about yesterday, you know, leadership, civic leadership, the front lines, maybe not just police, but EMS, nurses, you know, firefighters, people in the criminal justice system. Maybe I want to be a public defender. You know, maybe I want to be on the other side of this, or I want to be a council member or a mayor or a county board member. There's still nobility in that. You know, talk to me a little bit about the career possibilities, because, yeah, with all of those list of things that are maybe in the negative category of what law enforcement people have to put up, you are part of something bigger than yourselves. Yeah. You do something wholly different every day than a kid walking in to sit, in a workstation without any interaction with the people. You can help.
Yeah, you actually can be out there and touch lives and touch people. You know, if you're working, and no knock on anybody that's not in this field, but you probably don't have that day-to-day contact that those first responders on the front lines have. And a lot of times we're that last defense, or we're the last call before things go bad. But we take that responsibility and like it, because we do, and we can touch people. And it happens all the time. I mean, a great example of police officers doing other things other than just policing is a couple of years ago, we had and I've probably told this story, but we had a burglary of a young lady's vehicle at Christmas time. Spent all her money on her kid's Christmas, and these items got stolen, and now their kid wasn't going to have these presents for Christmas. The officers take it upon themselves, and they go out and purchase this stuff that was stolen and give it to the lady so that her kids can have a good Christmas. So that's a way that, you know, you wouldn't think police officers can touch people other than in that, you know.
Yeah,
that,
but that's exactly capacity. Right. One of your officers came to us with the whole cops and gobblers idea of handing out turkeys at the Boys and Girls Club. I mean, that wasn't somebody saying, hey, go do this. That was their initiative.
Right, and it's not just us as police officers do that. Those other first responders do that as well, whether it be the fire department or the ambulance workers and things like that. We want to spread our and touch people as much as we can, and sometimes we go above and beyond to do that.
Well, and they're even teaching that at the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center, I was honored to be asked to be the guest speaker at the last graduating class for this. And I don't think we had it. We may have had like maybe Sarah Gordo or something. I don't think we had any Decatur folks. These are people who all had police departments they were going back to all over the state of Illinois. So meaning they didn't have any real history or connection to our community. But while they were here, they are required to do a service project for the community. This last class did three, maybe four, you know, on their own. I mean, and they had a Halloween thing. We went out there. I mean, there were over 1,000 kids that came out. So these young recruits that are starting their careers, they're being taught that as well as everything else at that law enforcement
training. And that's great that they're doing that down there. 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, people, you know, in law enforcement would have laughed at doing something like that. But that's how much we've evolved. And they're doing a great job with that because, you know, they started down there at the academy, and we expect the same thing at our police department when they get there. So Tad and Tom and Ed Culp do a great job down there, and that's an awesome program to show them that, you know, police officers can do other things than just enforce the law.
Yeah, and a lot of it is proactive. Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, I know you've spent a lot of time as chief doing just that. You got to buy up a lot of goodwill in the community in case something does happen, right? And that investment you put on the front end really sort of determines what happens on the back end.
It does. If I waited until something bad happens to start reaching out to people and get to know people, it's too late at that point. And besides the just having that relationship for when bad things happen, it's the right thing to do. I, as a chief of police, I should know as many people in this community as possible, especially the leaders and the ones that are making impacts on the city and that maybe need the police department to help them out in certain areas. So not only is it something that helps us if something bad happens, it's just the right thing to do and something we should be doing.
All right. And I know it's probably hard not to take some of the attacks that happen at council meetings, you know, by some of the fringe folks as personal when they just, I think most of it's just out of ignorance. And whether it's willful ignorance or not is up to them. I can't, you know, testify to that. But I know what you guys have done as a department. Does that mean mistakes, don't come around? Sure they do. But you have invested in this community as a department, as a person, as a chief, not only because it's the smart thing to do, which it is, but it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And you know, we've evolved in that so much over the years. And past chief started it. I know Mark Bartholomew was big in the community and kind of started that. And it was just my job to carry it even steps further because it's everything evolves. You've evolved in the radio business. If Caterpillar still did things they were doing 20 years ago, they'd be out of business. And so we're a business too. I mean, yeah, we're not a not-for-profit. We're out there to serve the citizens, but we're still business, and we have to evolve as things change.
I tell you, I was awfully proud of our community and what you and Janelle Norman. I remember the day that we were in here, and we cut off to break into programming. We had an officer-involved shooting. And this was, you know, on the cusp of Ferguson and Baltimore and watching sort of cities burn all over the United States of America. But that day was a testament to that work that had been put in. And I think, having you in as a unified front for everybody to be calm and let the facts, you know, play out. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, that suspect lived, and proper, correct information was disseminated. We had some arguments and we had some people who had different opinions. But as a community, we came together that day. I was incredibly proud of all of you.
Yeah, it was bad that it happened, but it was great to see what working together and collaboration really does. You know, the ironic thing, the night before that, the evening before, I was just at a peace vigil at one of the local churches, and because Dallas had just happened and Louisiana just happened, where all the officers had been shot, and later on that morning, I get a phone call. We had an officer-involved shooting. I'm like, well, we're going to put this to a test and see how good we really are.
Yeah, I had a 5 a.m. of voicemail from the mayor. That's never a good thing at 5 a.m. Because good news can always wait.
Yeah,
bad news gets delivered immediately.
Right.
But it was, you know, but the officers did their job.
They did.
And the people, the leadership in this community did their job. And at the end of the day, if you put that work in and you build that foundation, doesn't mean everything's going to work out perfect, but it means people will listen to each other.
Yeah, and you know, the whole idea of these relationships is not for people just to say, when the police are involved in something like this, that the police are right. That's not the reason for it. It's just to have some transparency and for me to be able to share accurate information with these folks that they can take back to their followers. And that's the whole idea of it. And I will say that over the years coming up the ranks, I heard how difficult that certain organizations were to work with. And I will say that that's totally opposite of what my experience is.
Yeah. sometimes it's easier, you know, on social media when you don't have to sit face to face, you know, it's a lot easier to hate on everybody and everything. Doing it one-on-one like us sitting here today, it's a lot harder to do.
It is. And, yeah, you can bash somebody on Facebook and social media all day long, and you say things probably on there that you wouldn't say to somebody's face.
No, well, somebody was arrested yesterday for that very thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about that, because this was – I don't know all the particulars. I read the report for hate crimes. But involved with a private message that was sent on social media to an individual, you know, there, because I bring this up only because I think there are certain people out there that think you can do anything on social media and there are no laws.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, I won't comment on that specific case, but there are laws. You can't harass people through social media directly. I mean, it's no different than years ago if you called somebody and left message after message on their voicemail, their phone, that was
making threats.
You can't do it. And so social media is no different. You know, it's not going to be allowed. And if somebody has a complaint, you know, we'll investigate and prosecute.
All right. Chief, we appreciate you. We'll see you next month.
Thank you very much.
Chief Jim Getz, the Decatur Police Department.